We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the Riverfront Bengals Show, episode 34. Who's your favorite number 34 in NFL history, Greg?
Wow, favorite number 34. Well, I would have to do some thinking on that one.
I mean, you got Bo Jackson.
That was the first one that popped into my head, but I would like to dig deeper. That's such an easy choice. I don't know. I would have to think about that one.
I like Fernandez Vincent. It's an old school. I don't know. Do you remember Fernandez Vincent?
No.
Safety right. Safety for the terrible Bengals in the early 90s, early to mid 90s.
Okay. I was born in 90, so I missed that period.
No excuse, man. You got to be up on this stuff. Anyway, I am your host, Joe Farsing. Alongside me is my good friend and hopefully yours, Greg Niemann. What is going on, my friend?
Nothing. Living the dream. Excited, ready for this draft. It's finally draft day. I can't believe it.
All of the stupidity, the months of just my favorite part of draft season is just everybody talking up these prospects and then all of a sudden everybody bashing these prospects because they've got nothing else to do. Yeah. It's silly season. And that's the NFL offseason from, you know, after the Super Bowl until training camp picks up is just silliness. So it just kind of fits right in. But I don't like silly. Like, I don't need that to be silly. I'm silly enough on my own. I don't, you know, let's just get this thing rolling.
Okay, deal.
Before we get started, as always, if you guys are watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe. If you're listening on Spotify, if you're on Apple Podcasts, etc., click the subscribe, follow button, whatever. Rate us if you can, 5 stars only. Consider joining us at patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. At the Riverfront, our community is always growing. It is a fun community. You get access to our always entertaining Slack channel. Greg just finally just logged onto that one. And we have a lot of fun just talking during Reds games, Bengals games. We even talk about the other football, movies, whatever. It's a good time. We have a once a month live hangout on Zoom. And we've got some cool news that's hopefully going to be coming down later in the summer that we'll all be glad to share with you. So. Outside of that, you ready to roll? Let's roll.
I'm ready to rock and roll.
Yes, sir. A little bit of Bengals news just to start off with here. Joe Burrow's fifth-year option was picked up. Pretty much a formality. It means absolutely nothing towards his long-term extension. It gives them a data point for dollars on 2024. People were kind of freaking out, like, oh, if they're being cheap, they're not going to extend him. Well, what do you say to someone like that?
It's one step in a 100-step process of getting Joe Burrow's real extension done. So everybody knew that was going to happen. Now it allows them to start working on putting extra money in that year. It is what it is. And it's a good thing. I mean, you know, yeah, we knew it was going to happen. It's good. And now that just gets us one step closer to the next extension. So it is what it is.
Yeah, exactly. It precludes nothing. It's a formality. You'll see a lot of these guys get their fifth-year option picked up for that reason, just so you have a data point. You know what money to, you know, that you can put in for 2024 when that contract extension comes down the line. You can add more money to that or take money, you know, put into a bunch, whatever. It just provides a structure.
Yeah.
You're going to, you know, Chase Young's got declined, which is be interesting to see if he gets moved today. That would be
pretty wild. Yeah.
Duke Tobin, I think, needs to make a phone call there to see just to see if, you know, they have any interest in moving him. But you'll see all these other quarterbacks. Herbert will get his fifth year option picked up. Tua's will get picked up, especially Tua's, because he won't be extended during this offseason with his medical history anyway. But it's
and I think they have like 6 more days left to do that, I believe. I think their deadline's in like 5 or 6 days for picking up those fifth year options. So you'll see a bunch of those rolling out. The fact that the Bengals did it a week earlier just kind of guarantees that they are working with Burrow on that extension. So let's go ahead and get this done and see what we can add into it.
Absolutely. T. Higgins back working with the team. They've got their offseason program going on. To me, that's a good sign of progress, don't you think?
Yeah. I haven't seen anything to this day that looks like a bad sign of progress. Everything that you've seen or heard from the Bengals and from T. Higgins, it's all been good. None of it's been bad. So this would be another step of things that it's not necessarily great news, but it's news that just kind of falls in line. Same thing with Burrow. It's a long process, and this is just another piece of information that falls in that line of thinking that they are going to get these things done. So to me, I see it as a good thing. I'm not jumping up and down, super excited, but it's just another good thing that shows that they're on the right path to getting these things finished.
Yeah, you'll see a lot of guys who's up for an extension. Jesse Bates 2 years ago, he sat out the voluntary part. And I understand you don't want to get hurt when there's a lot of uncertainty of what's going to happen to your contract in the following year. So I wouldn't even begrudge him if he did sit out, because the pen hasn't gone to paper yet. He only has one more guaranteed year. So that's, you know, that he's here, that he's, you know, in the building and actually working out, I think that's really good sign. It may ultimately just mean nothing, and he's not a guy who would sit out, but, you know,
it's definitely not bad news, you know? Yeah. So it's definitely something we're okay with.
Yeah. Portends to good news in the future, you would think. The last little bit of Bengals news is Lyle Collins was in house. He was there with open locker room a couple days ago. No timetable on his return. Apparently, he injured his knee a little worse than we expected, or than we originally heard. It was the ACL and the MCL. He's in great spirits. He said he's ready to go out there right now, throw a brace on his knee, and he'll be out blocking tomorrow. Obviously, that's not happening. And he said to him, he has no say on his timetable to return. It's up to the doctors. But again, and he seems ready to go. I think he seems energized. He played all year last year, hurt, and it showed. He wasn't the guy that they thought they were getting. He wasn't the guy that played in Dallas. But if we can get something even close to that, even if he goes on PUP and has to sit out, you know, a good chunk of the season, you hold down the fort with Cody Ford, with Jack Garman, with if Jonah's still here, you know, if you can hold down the fort for a handful of games with those guys, God knows they've had worse on the line the last couple of years, and then you get a healthy and rested Collins for the stretch run, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, also, I mean, for me, the biggest key to the Lyle Collins thing was what you mentioned, his attitude. When you have a major injury like that, and by all accounts, it wasn't Lyle Collins, you know, best year, which I'm not blaming him, but it wasn't his best year. And you have a major knee injury, a lot of times, you know, doubt, uncertainty, maybe you lose a little bit of that dog in you. Am I still the guy I think I am? Can I be everything I want to be? The fact that he has a positive spirit to me is a massive, massive thing. So I felt really good about him having a positive spirit. And then I also heard him speak a little bit about Jonah Williams, and basically patting Jonah Williams on the back and saying, you know, he's a phenomenal football player. We love Jonah Williams, yada, yada, yada. If Lyle Collins can convince Jonah Williams in any way, then that's also a great thing. So everything I heard about Lyle Collins, I think there was a lot. I was a lot more excited about the Lyle Collins news of him being in good spirits and then talking Jonah Williams up. Both of those two things were more significant to me than maybe the Burrow extension or T. Higgins, you know, being back in the fold. Those two pieces of information to me, I think, can be directly you know, more important for the Bengals this year.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's obviously not bad news that he still has that, still has fire in him. And he's, you know, if he's trying to recruit Jonah, like, hey, we're better with you on our team. Like, you're a good player. Like, we, you know, we want you here as, you know, as teammates. It shows a lot of leadership, I think, more than anything else. Not that this team's lacking in leadership. I mean, especially on the O-line, you got Teddy Karras, who might be one of my favorite guys in the entire league. But, again, it's good to see, and hopefully he can be – and who knows, maybe they even draft a right tackle, but hopefully he's not rushed back. And when he does come back in the lineup, even if he's a swing tackle as a backup, I mean, mm-hmm. that's a good – you know, if he's healthy, that's a hell of a swing tackle to have, a lot better than Akeem Adeniji.
Yeah.
Some of the other guys that they've had recently.
And I'm never turning down – more leadership on a football team. If I'm a football coach and you say, hey, I got this guy, he's a great leader and he can play. Yep. Done. So I'll take it.
Absolutely. I mean, that's, there's no such thing as having too much leadership. I mean, you want, I mean, hell, if you could have 53 leaders, you know, natural born leaders, 53 guys that were captains in college, you know, 100%. You're going to have a hell of a team. I mean, that's going to overcome, you know, that's going to push you a notch above where your talent may lay, because those guys are going to be fighting and, you know, kicking everyone's ass to be the next man up and to, you know, play above their level. So,
yeah, no doubt.
Did you hear Aaron Rodgers is finally a New York Jet?
Oh, it's over. The saga is over. The craziest storyline that was almost not really a storyline. I don't even know what to call it. It's over. Thank goodness.
It's the conclusion of one of the dumbest storylines in human history, at least until next offseason. Because he hasn't committed to playing past
when he starts it back up. Yeah, exactly.
The concern is that he's going to send unsolicited pics of his Johnson to Jet team staffers, like the last legendary quarterback that left Green Bay.
There's precedent.
I mean, there's precedent. If that happens, then he's going to end up playing in Minnesota in 2024. But yeah. I'm less drama. Yay. Yeah. Cool. Okay.
The big question for me on the Aaron Rodgers thing is who won the trade? And I don't know. I don't know that anybody's a winner in this trade. I think at the end of it, the Jets are going to end up being unsatisfied with what happened. You know, if we look back at this 2 years from now, I think the Jets will end up being unsatisfied. And I think the Packers will end up being the winners of this trade by default. Cause I just don't have a whole lot of faith in Aaron Rodgers working out in another place. I mean, he's unhappy no matter what happens. I just don't. I think the Jets will, in the lures of history, they will regret this move at some point.
I don't know. I wouldn't go so far as saying regret, because who else do they have to play quarterback? I mean, yeah, they've got a lot of draft capital they could have traded up to pick someone towards the top of this draft if they thought one of those guys were the answer. Again, I don't think he's Aaron Rodgers, NFL MVP. I think that guy's gone. I mean, he's one of the top quarterbacks in NFL history, so I'm not going to put anything past him. I mean, how long has Tom Brady played like an absolute all-pro? I mean, well, in
time his 40s. Time out. Did you just compare Tom Brady to Rodgers or Rodgers to Brady?
I'm talking about older quarterbacks that are keeping, you know, sustaining. Older quarterbacks that are sustaining play a lot longer than anyone would expect them to. Yeah. I'm not counting him out, but you have to put, you know, house money has to go on Mother Nature and Father Time, right?
Yes.
So even if he performs, you look at the, you know, the package, the haul that the Packers got back, and it's fine, I guess, but who cares?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can give the Jets Aaron Rodgers, and Aaron Rodgers right now in the AFC might not even be, I mean, you could argue he's not a top three or four quarterback, you know? That's how crazy the AFC is right now. So I just don't know that this trade will, in the end, net the Jets any real success. I just don't know if it will.
I think they're the best team in the AFC East right now. They had a fantastic team, especially, I mean, that rookie class, that might have been one of the best rookie classes ever.
Unbelievable.
Garrett, I mean, even with Breece Hall going down early, you had Sauce Gardner as one of the top two or three cornerbacks in the entire league. Rookies don't do that.
Yeah, if not the best. If not the best, yeah.
Exactly. Garrett Wilson, I mean, they had the offensive and defensive rookie of the year. And again, that's with the favorite at the time going down with with the knee injury. So yeah, you've got all those young guys. They've got a ton of guys on defense.
It's mind-blowing what they did.
Yeah, they've got a really – like, they built that team really, really solidly. But let's look at the quarterbacks in the AFC right now. Baltimore Ravens, again, they have Lamar Jackson. This literally just happened 15, 20 minutes before we came on here. They agreed with a 5-year, $260 million something. I'm not sure the actual breakdown number. Info has been kind of sparse right now. So he's back for 5 years. Bills have Josh Allen. Bengals have Joe Burrow. Deshaun Watson played at an all-pro level before all the crap. I mean, I hope he burns in hell. I don't care but
right.
The guy's played some fantastic football in his career. He's still a young man. Russell Wilson, he's somewhere between who he was pre-2022 and last year, which means he's probably still a good quarterback. Trevor Lawrence, Pat Mahomes, Justin Herbert, Tagovailoa. Mac Jones is like one of the worst quarterbacks in the AFC right now. And then who knows, whatever rookies, Colts are going to get a new quarterback. Texans, we'll talk about that here in a little bit, but they're going to, probably maybe not have a top draft pick a quarterback. It's ridiculous. I mean, who's the worst starting quarterback in the AFC right now?
Go ahead. My bad.
I was going to say it has to be the Colts by default. If I look at it at it's 5:15 on Thursday, April 27th, because Gardner Minshew, Nick Foles, right. Sam Ellinger, but ask me that tomorrow morning after the first round has gone through, there's not one terrible quarterback. I mean, Texans have Davis Mills, but again, I still think they're going to pick a quarterback at two.
Yeah. Oh, I saw a list of AFC quarterbacks. They ranked it. And I thought the list was, pretty accurate. And obviously I disagreed with a couple spots, but for the overall part, I thought it was a pretty good list. And it had Mac Jones as the second worst quarterback in the AFC, which I'm not a big Mac Jones guy, but for him to be the second worst quarterback in the conference, that's pretty incredible. I mean, because he's not garbage. He's a serviceable quarterback.
I think he's going to turn in a Andy Dalton type career, which, again, that's not a franchise altering guy, but Andy Dalton won a lot of football games in this league. He's won more than he's lost. You look at where he is. Again, I appreciate Andy Dalton a hell of a lot more now than I did while he was here. I always thought he was a decent quarterback, but you look at where his numbers actually stack up, and he's had a hell of a career, especially for someone who's a second round pick.
Right. And well, you put it in perspective, when Andy Dalton was with the Bengals, he was not the second to worst quarterback in the AFC.
No.
He was clearly leaps and bounds above that. So the fact that Mac Jones right now, you could make a list and really argue that he's the second worst quarterback, and then maybe after the draft, you could even vault him up to being the worst. That's insanity. I mean, that's just that's crazy.
Yeah, you compare that to the NFC. Des Ritter, I love Des Ritter. I mean, but he was a third round pick and he played five or six games and did what I think better than expected, but nothing fantastic. Kyler Murray coming off injury, he's been up and down. He's electric but enigmatic. Andy Dalton. Spoke about him. I mean, he's right now listed as a starting quarterback in Carolina. He's probably going to be the starter even after they draft somebody, at least for better part of the season. Mm-hmm. Justin Fields, can he throw the ball? Dak Prescott, he's good. Jared Goff had a hell of a season, but you can you really put that guy among the top quarterbacks in the league at the
How high are you putting Matt Stafford right now? I mean.
Yeah.
I don't feel good about Matt Stack. I wouldn't be real happy if he was my quarterback. Not saying he can't do it, but
yeah,
now's not the moment.
He's old. I mean, he's old. Yeah. He's had a lot of bumps and bruises. I mean, he's had a hell of a career, but he,
Yeah.
That wears on you. Jordan Love, you have no idea what you have. Yeah. Jordan Love, you have no idea what you have there. Kirk Cousins, Derek Carr, Daniel Jones. I mean, Jalen Hurts is stud. Okay. I'm not on the Brock Purdy train. I think it was so weird and flukish that someone that was a seventh rounder was able to perform. Yeah, San Francisco's offense is – you don't want to take you know, to take all credit away from him, that he performed that well is great, but they've got there's a great support system around that.
No doubt.
Geno Smith, you buy him being the guy he was last year over the guy he was of the first 10 years of his career. Tampa Bay has Kyle Trask and Baker Mayfield.
Ooh.
And Washington has Sam Howell and Jacoby Brissett.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
rough.
Yeah, there's that AFC is a meat grinder, man.
It really is.
Last little bit of league-wide news. Yay for Nashville and the Titans. Approved for a $2.1 billion new stadium because Nissan Stadium was a whole 20-some-odd years old. $1.26 billion in public funds. Public has to build playgrounds for billionaires.
Yeah,
I mean, that's – Mike Brown isn't a billionaire. He doesn't have money in the bank, but it's still dumb that cities are paying for office buildings for, you know, for a multi-billion-dollar corporation. I hate it, but it's going to keep happening. The Bengals are going to have to – or City of Cincinnati, Hamilton County is going to have to fork over a ton of money here soon to renovate – or, I mean, the county actually wants the Bengals to build a new stadium. They want them to build a dome so they can get into a possible Super Bowl or NCAA Final Four, something like that. Who knows? But it's 20-some-odd-year stadium. Should not be antiquated and old. I don't get it. But, yeah, at least I believe that Mike Brown has now had that mantle of having the biggest fleecing of taxpayers taken away from him. Congrats, Amy Adams Strunk, who, you know, she is the principal owner of the Titans. So, yay!
I don't know how they pull it off, but they do. They find a way to get that money somehow. More power to them, I guess.
Yeah, not to get deep into politics, but the state of Tennessee doesn't have anything else on their plate right now than to fork out. Let's move on before I make this a politics show and lose all three of our viewers. Today, are you aware today is round one of the NFL draft?
It's here. I'm ready. Thank
God.
I know. All the talk is over. The crazy part is I feel no closer to knowing what the draft is going to look like today than I did months ago when Kiper and McShay and all these guys started putting out their first mock drafts. I feel like they have provided me with no more information. We are no closer to knowing what's going to happen. I think tonight's going to be absolutely wild. And I think I would equate picking the 32 picks correctly this year to like the NCAA tournament perfect bracket. I think this draft could go a multitude of ways. And I think it could be absolutely insane. I think you could see runs at certain positions you never expected. I think that this is going to be one of the craziest drafts we've seen in a long time, just from the lack of knowing. We don't even know who's going to be the number one pick or the number two pick yet. And I feel like on most years, you can kind of forecast through about five. You can kind of know. Like Ja'Marr Chase at five, you kind of knew that was happening.
Yeah.
This year, I mean, if you can tell me who's going third, congratulations to you, because I don't think anybody has any idea.
No, I mean, it's pretty safe assumption that Bryce Young will be picked first overall, but it's not set in stone. Again, I had this point up, the betting lines, I didn't check to see what they were today, but for Will Levis, his odds to go number one overall, well, Bryce Young, his odds are minus 1,400. So, I mean, he's odds on favorite to be first overall pick. Will Levis was plus 2,500 on April 17th. A week later on the 24th, which was Monday, plus 1,600. And on Tuesday was down to plus 550. And this is all per Caesar's Sportsbook. Who's talking to where's that money coming from? That's weird. Those odds this close to the draft are swinging that wildly. Like, is there some insider leaking stuff to a bunch of gamblers that are just throwing a lot of crazy shit at money, or some one goofy ass billionaire throw $500 million on Will Levis and it just swung, you know?
Well, I think
what do you make of that?
I think there's a couple things. One, I don't think it takes a ton of money. Like, I don't think the draft gets as much money as, you know, people think as far as betting. So I think that if somebody threw $5,000 or $10,000 on Will Levis to go number one overall, I think that would drastically affect the odds. So I think that's a little bit of it. The second part that I heard this snippet of information that Will Levis is telling family and friends close to him that he's going to be the number one pick, that he heard he is going to be the number one pick in Carolina, and that he's telling family and friends, which the story kind of adds up to me, because the odds are kind of showing that. So as these family and friends are getting this information, I mean, some of them have got to be using it, you know? And so the word on the street that I've heard is that Will Levis is telling people actively that he is going to be the number one pick. Now, I'm not saying I believe that, but that's the story I heard, that he is out whispering that around.
That's absolutely wild to me. I think that would be just a gigantic mistake. I think that's taking Ryan Leaf over Peyton Manning. Not that anybody in this draft is Peyton Manning. Like, this is, you have a couple, I think you've got two guys that I think you can count on to be solid starters in the NFL, and Bryce Young and CJ Stroud, and then a bunch of question marks. But that's, if he goes number one, that's kind of like, what are we doing?
What happens? I mean, what happens after that? If he goes one, I mean, what happens? I just think this draft could get completely insane, because if that happens, I mean, you'll have people coming from all over the place trying to get number two all of a sudden. And then does Houston trade out? Do they take their guy? Do they? I mean, it could just go so many different ways. I just think it's going to be a wildly entertaining draft. And I agree with you about Levis. I mean, he wouldn't be my number one pick, and I'm a huge Kentucky fan. I love Kentucky football. I love Will Levis, but I still wouldn't take him number one. And I'm biased, and I wouldn't take him number one. So I just think things could get really crazy tonight.
It's going to be interesting. Like, if he, I don't know, people are gambling on him thinking that he is Josh Allen. Excuse me. I mean, Josh Allen was that freak who was basically nothing but this wildly athletic guy that over, you know, what took him, a year and a half in the NFL to be able to kind of become who he is, one of the top five quarterbacks in the entire league. But he's not the prototype, he's not who you project people to be. He's an outlier. You know, you're more, you know, more likely to get someone who's just going to bust out because they, you know, they struggle with the mechanics, or, you know, they're out there just freelancing. I think people talking up Anthony Richardson at that early in the draft, kind of the same thing. I've heard a lot of stuff. I guess he's got fantastic pocket presence and probably the most athletic quarterback. I think his RAS score, when they measure the, for those that don't know, that's math. It's at Math Bomb, I think, on Twitter. They take their physical attributes, like their height, their weight, for, you know, compared to the average, you know, for their position, and then their numbers at the combine, like their 40 time, 10 yard split, 20, you know, things like that, and then their strength numbers from the whatever. And I think he has the highest score, a perfect 10.0, which is the highest of any quarterback that they've measured at this, but he still completed only 53% of his passes. If he has all that athletic ability and he has all that pocket presence, then there's a big chunk missing. And like, if you're picking somebody that high in the draft, you're getting someone that you know you've got to fix. Mm-hmm. Like Trevor Lawrence, Joe Burrow, a lot of these guys that were, you know, that went 1-1 or, you know, top, you know, two or three guys. These are guys that you need to make just minor adjustments, you know, fix a small hitch, you know, something that can be worked out with in, you know, get smoothed out within like one training camp or, you know, or one off season. Someone that has that big of a discrepancy between what, you know, they measure out to and what's on film. Like, I'm not saying you can't reach that plateau, like that ceiling that you have, but.
But to take him in the top five, I mean, that's super sketchy. I agree with you. The 53% to me for Anthony Richardson is so scary, especially because it's not like he was in an offense that wasn't – he was in a high-powered offense surrounded by athletes that wants to throw the football. So theoretically, you should be completing – you know, like the blueprint of that offense is to complete 65-plus percent of your passes. So to be at 53% is super scary. It's not like you were in a offense with a bad offensive coordinator that didn't have pieces around him, you know, and you know, you're playing against teams that are way better than you, more talented. You can kind of understand some of those things, like Josh Allen coming out of Wyoming. Okay. He's not always, you know, he's not playing with the best players all the time. Yeah. Anthony Richardson was. To complete 53% is even more of a red flag for me. I don't understand the Anthony Richardson thing. The 40-yard dash, your broad jump, how high you jump. To me, at quarterback, I really don't care about those things. I care about, can you stare down the barrel of a double A-gap blitz and take it in the chin and deliver the ball on time and accurately? Yeah. And I don't see any way that you could look at Anthony Richardson and be like, that's the guy I want to do that. I don't see that at this moment.
Yeah, maybe he's great at climbing the pocket or working through his progressions, but if you're not finding that guy, like, that's great if you can find your third, you know, find your third option, but if you're not throwing it accurately to him, what does it matter?
Like, especially in the NFL.
Yeah. They'll find those weaknesses and they will pick them apart. I don't know. Like, again, I don't know if it's – supposedly this is a strong draft, like in terms of top to bottom. Again, the – guys that break down the film, the guys that do this for a living, you know, they know what they're looking at top to bottom, like how many people, you know, how many prospects are, you know, at this position, you know, this, that, and the other. But it doesn't seem quarterback wise. It's not as strong. Last year was a historically terrible quarterback draft. And this one just seems slightly better. The names are a little sexier because they played at big time programs. I mean, Malik Willis and Des Ritter didn't come from two blue chip schools. Neither did Kenny Pickett. If they went to SEC schools, they probably would have been picked a lot higher. I think Bryce Young and CJ Stroud are the most sure things, but I don't even think either of them are franchise Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow type guys. It's weird. There's a lot of depth in a lot of different areas, but.
Well, and I think a little piece of this is that people are reaching for quarterback because of what you just said, how historically bad that quarterback draft was last year.
Yeah.
These organizations that need a quarterback, they're always going to be quarterback hungry. But when you have a hungry dog and you don't feed them for 2 days, when you put out food on that third day, it could be the worst food ever. And you're going to be like, that dog's going to be like, I want that.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like that's kind of what's going on with these quarterbacks right now. Now, I think there's a couple of nice prospects in here, but I think there's some that are being, you know, fluffed up to a place that I think we're really starting to reach on some of these quarterbacks, but it's because these teams haven't seen prime rib in a week. And they're like, it's time for some prime rib.
Yeah. These are big name prospects that went to either huge programs or in, you know, Will Levis's case, I mean, he played in the SEC. So he's on playing these marquee programs and, you know, you put up numbers against, you know, Alabama or Georgia, even if your team gets absolutely smoked, you're going to get a lot more exposure, but it's crazy. Do you have any surprises that you think that's going to happen when you look at guys, either someone that is way off the board, that's going to be drafted pretty high, or is there someone that's a high, you know, high projected guy that's supposed to be top 10, top 15? Do you see anyone dropping like a rock? It happens every year.
The one guy I would think that has the ability to, I think he really has the ability to fall. And the more I've looked at him, the more I think this is the Quentin Johnson from TCU, the receiver. Go look at his stats and especially in big games when he's playing what would be closer to NFL talent.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's a no-show. There's multiple games, and actually it's the majority of games where he's playing people that are closer to NFL talent. He's an absolute no-show. The second aspect of that is when he gets real physical coverage, he has no ability to separate and to give himself, give that quarterback the window to throw into. I think for me, I think he is the the closest thing I can say that is definitely going to be a bust for me. I would not want to draft that guy in the first round or anywhere near it. He just doesn't show up in big moments. And you're telling me you play a college football season of 12 games and you probably have three or four games against NFL quality corners. And you don't show up in those games. And now I'm supposed to take you to a 16 game season and you're going to show up. You're going to show up all the time.
Yeah.
I just don't see it. That prospect really scares me. I've seen him linked to the Ravens. I hope the Ravens take him. That would be awesome. But he's my bust potential of the draft.
When you look at his physical attributes, he's 6'3", 215, 220, somewhere in that range. This is a guy that should be able to, you know, separate against physical coverage. I mean, he's got the strength. He's ran a 4.46 somewhere, you know, somewhere in the 4.4s. So, I mean, he's got plenty of speed. I think it's a lot of projection, and I hate projection when you're picking high. Again, could he turn out to be, you know, I don't even know physically. I can't remember how big exactly AJ Green was. He was 6'4".
I think he was 6'4", yeah.
6'4", similar weight rise. I mean, maybe he turns into, like, maybe he can turn into someone like that. I mean, he's faster than T. Higgins, so that's not much of a, you know, one-for-one comp. But, again, if you're picking someone, and, yeah, he's been listed as a top half of the first round, projecting those guys, man, it's you want either a sure thing or trade back.
Yeah, and that's I feel like that guy's just not a sure thing. Now, listen, he may become the greatest football player of all time. You know, he may come out and work his tail off, and it may be phenomenal. But to me, there's so many red flags with him. I would feel very uncomfortable in the top half of the draft taking him.
Yeah. My guy is, and we just talked about him, is Anthony Richardson. I've seen people actually on social media today say, oh, this guy, like, he's not dropping out of the top five. He's going to be top three. And I'm – is that them talking themselves into it? But, again, and I'm not a tape cruncher. I look at – you know, I see raw stats and I see a handful of games. But there aren't a ton of teams, I think, that are going to go quarterback high, you know, going to go with quarterback that high unless there's a bunch of trades, which there could be 15 trades in the first round. I don't know. It's going to be absolutely bonkers. But – I wouldn't be surprised if he's still on the board in the 20s. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know they're expecting, they're saying five quarterbacks are going to go with Hendon Hooker. I don't think Hendon Hooker is a first round quarterback in and of himself, but that's, you know, a totally different story. He's 25 years old and he's coming off an ACL injury. Let someone, you know, someone wants to trade with the Bengals, you know, from the top half of the second round and trade out of the first round, I'm cool with that. Give them more picks, and, you know, you want to get a guy who's going to be going for a second contract when he's 30 years old, which
it's hard to fathom. It really is.
Yeah.
But you look back at Chris Winkie. I mean, Chris Winkie was a first round pick at, I think he was 27 or 28.
Was he a first rounder? So I think Winkie was like a later round. It was
Brandon Whedon.
Whedon from Oklahoma State.
Brandon Whedon.
Yes. I mean, these are guys that played. These guys that played color minor league baseball. That's why they were coming out so late. And neither of those guys, and neither of these older prospects, panned out at all. Brandon Whedon was terrible. Absolutely, yeah, he was terrible. Awful. And like, if someone at that age, you're not getting any projection. They're not going to get any more athletic. They're, you know, mm-hmm. You can work with some things mechanically, but certain things when you're mid late 20s, I mean, that's when you should be in your prime, not when you're stepping onto a crappy football team trying to, you know, lead them. So,
yeah, 100%.
Yeah, again, nothing against the guy. Hopefully, he does well for himself. But
yeah,
in the first round, I think it's weird. Do you any prospects that are late, you know, that you think are going to sneak in that no one's going to, people aren't expecting this to sneak into the first round.
That will sneak into the back end of the first round. I think for me, I think more so I think it's really hard to project who's going to sneak in. I think I see a lot of tight ends falling out is the thing that I see. I it's really hard for me to kind of diagnose who's going to step in, but I think the one thing I will say is I think tight ends are going to have a rough day at this draft, and I think it's Unfortunately, it's kind of like their own fault because they're all too good.
Yeah.
There's too many of them that are good enough that I think you'll see teams kind of bypass that. And I think you'll see runs on other positions, and that'll cause, you know, tight ends to keep sinking, because if I'm the Bengals sitting there at 28 and I can take one, but there's four other ones that I think are similar, I'm just going to wait till my next pick. And I think that's the one thing I think I can kind of project, is that tight ends will have a bad day early, at least.
Yeah. It's one of those non premium positions. I mean, yeah, it's great to have it's great to have a Travis Kelce. It's great to have a George Kittle. Where were those guys drafted?
Right.
Kelce was a third rounder. Kittle was a fifth rounder, if I'm not mistaken.
Kittle was later. Yeah.
Yeah. First round tight ends don't turn out well. There's not a long history of those guys. Was Gronkowski a first rounder? Was he bad?
Like, Gronkowski was a second rounder out of Arizona. Yeah.
Okay. Was that Aaron Hernandez that was a first rounder?
Aaron Hernandez was a fifth rounder.
Okay. I can't remember.
Because of all the character issues,
issues?
I don't. I'll leave that one. I'll leave that ball in your court. There was a couple.
Yeah.
Just a couple.
Yeah, exactly. We got to get out of here in a hurry, so we'll kind of rush through stuff. But what's your final forecast for the Bengals at pick 28 tonight?
My final forecast is I think that they either go with the local guy, Michael Mayer, at 28, even though I just said we'll see a fall on tight ends. I do think they're partial to taking local guys. But if I really have to say, I think I think 28 is going to be either an offensive tackle or a corner. That's what I think they end up settling there as those tight ends slide. I think offensive tackle or corner, I think, is where they're gonna hone in. But I think it's going to be a wild draft, and I'm super excited, and I just can't wait to see it, because I think it's going to be really entertaining.
Yeah, this is definitely going to be one it's going to be fun just to watch. I don't watch it live on TV because I think it's boring listening to guys blather on. But just watching, on the draft tracker, just seeing this trade goes on in the next pick, like three more picks. Like, it's like, wow, this is like, you can't even remember who was picking in certain spots. I think there's going to be some pick that's moved three different times. Someone trades back and then trades back up from that spot or trades back again. For the Bengals, again, the only spot that they are looking that I would be disappointed is going to be tight end, because, again, it's a very tight end heavy draft. You can get a very capable and strong tight end in the second round, third round, fourth round, even into the fifth round. There are 11 guys that are like going to get drafted before the fifth round. You can get that guy in round three, in round four. They don't need someone to step in this year. With them securing Drew Sample and Herb Smith, they have that spot held down for 2023. I would like them to get like Zach Kuntz out of Old Dominion. I mean, he's got all the physical attributes. I know there's issues. You know, before he transferred to Old Dominion, there's some flags about that. But that's a guy you can get on early day three, and I think that's a better spot. There's a lot of smoke about the Bengals, and we'll get going to a viewer mail question we got from kind of the same thing from Nate Dotson and Joey Gaditza, two good friends of ours. If the Bengals would draft Jahmyr Gibbs if he is available. There's a lot of smoke, a lot of talk out there linking the Bengals. There's been a lot of last minute mock drafts from these guys that have, that are pretty well connected that have them picking Gibbs. I wouldn't be upset with that pick. He's a fantastic player. This offense would be immediately just even better than it has been. I think it's a pick that's more of a luxury pick at that spot. I'd rather him wait until round three to get somebody that is less of an every down back, but a guy who's great receiving, got great coming out of the backfield. Mixon's been around for the past 2 weeks in training. With the team, with the workout, they're not getting rid of him. Again, he's going to get probably just going to end up getting a pay cut. So you don't need that you don't need that bruiser guy anyway. You can use him and use the draft pick as a guy to come in and spell him. I honestly think I don't know. Again, there's a lot of people that are talking about a lot of cornerbacks. Forbes out of Mississippi State. I don't know if Banks is going to fall that far. He's another physical freak. I'm going to say that they're going to trade back. Somebody's going to. There's going to be one of the quarterbacks. Again, whether it's Anthony Richardson, I doubt he's there that late in the draft. But Anthony Richardson or Hendon Hooker, some team that passes on a quarterback, looking Las Vegas, like I said earlier, Las Vegas, maybe Atlanta, trading back into the back of the first round to get that guy. Mm-hmm. That, again, so they have that fifth-year option that's just easier. You know, you have easier sure. play if he's a stud, you know, and if he's just another guy, you at least have a guy for that extra year for a bridge. I think that's what's going to happen. They're going to end up picking. We're going to be waiting till 11:15 to find out that they traded that pick away, and then they'll pick early tomorrow when the draft starts up for rounds 2 and 3.
Yeah. So let me ask you a question. Let's say the Bengals are sitting there at 28, and they cannot find a trade partner. Let's say nobody wants to jump into that spot.
Yeah.
And your hands are tied, and you've got to make a move. What's your play? What's your feelings on that? If that scenario were to arise.
Dream scenario is if Kancey from Pitt slides down. I don't know. Aaron Donald obviously is the very obvious comp. Same college, same very similar attributes, size, height, arm length, things like that. But before him, the guy that kind of broke the mold for that size three technique is Geno Atkins. Obviously, the Bengals are very familiar with how great of a pick that was. Mm-hmm. Non-first round pick with absolute first round production, top of the draft first production.
Oh,
if
for
he
sure.
were available, yeah, if he were available, they wouldn't trade that at all. I think they would run absolutely sprint to the podium to announce that pick.
Mm-hmm.
More likely, maybe Miles Murphy. Never have enough edge rushers. Never have enough defensive line. Depth, Sam Hubbard and Trey Hendrickson play way too many snaps. Those guys get worn down. They were not the two of those guys had a lot of pressures. Turning pressures into sacks are kind of fluid. It's, you know, I mean, it's important to get pressure on the quarterback. Getting a sack isn't always isn't always what's expected, but they need more juice. And if those guys are playing that many snaps, they're going to wear down really, really fast. And then they've got who's the only other pass rusher behind them is Joseph Osai. And he came on strong last year at the end, but he's still a young guy who, mm-hmm. you know, is more potential than productivity.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll say lineman, either Kancey or Miles Murphy.
Yeah.
So
I wouldn't be mad about either one, but I think again, that's what makes this draft so much fun. We've talked, this is all for the Bengals. We've talked tight end, running back. We've talked offensive line. We've talked defensive edge. We've talked defensive interior. We've talked corner. And I think they're all possible. I really do. Yep. I mean, depending on what happens in front of them, I think it's all possible. So it's going to be an exciting night.
Yeah, I think the Bengals will want to trade just as they're, you know, if they have, you know, thinking of how that they think this, that the draft's going to play out in front of them, because they only have 7 draft picks. They don't have any comp picks. Right. Anything like that, and they've got positions that they like stocking up a year early, and they've got Cheeto is going into the last year of his deal, DJ Reader's going into the last year of his deal. You can never have enough offensive linemen. The interior guys, Karras and Kappa, are they were both fine last year. They're both good, but they're not young, and you want to keep those guys, you know, as functional backups if need be, and guys that can step right in and not miss a step. So I think they'll definitely want to try to add picks somewhere if possible, you know, even if it's second round, trading back a few spots into the third round and picking up an extra pick, extra fourth or a fifth. They're going to trade back at some point.
Yeah.
Only way I see them possibly even trading up is if they were to work out a deal for Jonah Williams. So,
yeah, I would agree with all those points.
You think that's on the table? Do you think it's likely? I don't say likely, but possible.
I would say very improbable is the way I would put it. I think Jonah Williams, looking at it now, I think the odds that he gets traded on draft night, I would say 5 to 10%. I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, it's most likely not going to happen. Again, it wouldn't be. I think it would be good if they got just moved on from him. I think they're a better team with him in the room, but you want guys that want to be there. And if he doesn't want to be there, if he doesn't want to be a right tackle, and obviously, clearly, he's not the right tackle on this team anymore. But you move on. So I think maybe 5% chance that he's gone. But again, Bengals don't really make trades unless they're blown away. So
yeah, if somebody comes in, if somebody comes in and blows him away, sure. But short of that, I just don't see him rushing that process.
Yeah, it's something that they'll sort out. I mean, it's he's got a high, very high price tag for someone who's going to be a backup, most likely. Maybe he starts, but I mean, he doesn't have a guaranteed job right now. So we shall see. Yep. Again, it's just going to be absolutely insane. Folks, that's all we have for this episode. Be on the lookout. This is going to get put up very, very early here on Thursday. We will be live tonight on about 10:30 this evening. It'll be Tim Daniels and myself. Hopefully Greg's going to be able to stop by. Chad might stop by. Chad Dotson might stop by as well. We will be there live for the Bengals pick or trade and have a little bit of analysis as to what's gone on so far. So until then, everyone, you guys take care. Greg, final words before we get out of here?
The draft is here. Enjoy it.
Woo! Yay! we are at team@riverfrontcincy.com. At Twitter, at TR Bengals Show. Find us on TikTok. Anywhere else you want to find us, go ahead and find us. Until then, everyone, you guys take care.